Thank you. It's thanks for having me here. So I'll talk about some work I did with Davide Gaiato, David Shi, and Andy Strominger like earlier this year. The plan is the following. So first I'll describe the connection between 4D and 5D black holes, which I'm sure you have all heard about, like Masagi mentioned that in his talk as well. Then I'll describe quarter BPS black holes in N-Cohn's four-string theory, and I'll describe how you can get a degeneracy of such black holes from this 4D, 5D connection, which turns out to agree with the conjecture of Diagoroff and Verlinde's in 96. But there's also subtleties which I'll mention. And then I'll describe 1/8 BPS black holes in N-Cohn's eight-string commodification. And finally, if I have time, I'll describe some comparison to topological strings based on these results. So let me describe the connection between 4D and 5D black holes. Let's consider a Kolmogorov commodification. Say we take five-dimensional Minkowski space and just come back on a circle. And as we know, there are Kolmogorov gauge fields, and there are monopoles which have magnetic charge with respect to the Kolmogorov U1 gauge field. Let's consider a Kolmogorov monopole sitting in R3, and there's time. It's well known that this thing lifts to a five-dimensional geometry to be the Taubner space. So times time, of course, the Taubner space is a four-dimensional hyperkähler manifold. It can be pictured in as a cigar-like object. So there's asymptotically it's R3 cross S1, which is clear. Due to this closed-plane monopole, this S1 is non-trivially fibered near where the closed-plane monopole was sitting at. So in such a way that it actually has a smooth tip, and the tip is just look at like R4. I just say that this is the closed-plane monopole with only one unit of magnetic charge. It has more units of the charge with respect to the Kolmogorov gauge field, then there will be an orbifold singularity here. Any questions? Comments? Any questions on that? Okay. So now we can consider having a black hole in four dimensions, but one that carries one unit of Kolmogorov monopole charge. So what happens when we lift such a black hole to five dimensions? Well, asymptotically, it's basically the same. So we expect that this thing to lift to something in the Taubner space. But since you have a black hole at the origin which carries the closed-plane monopole charge, we expect that this thing will lift to some kind of black hole which is asymptotically the Taubner space times time. In particular, this black hole not only can carry, well, we will just require it to carry one unit of closed-plane monopole charge, but we can also have this black hole carrying some closed-plane electric charge. When that happens, the electric charge is just the momentum with respect to the translation along this S1 asymptotically, but near the tip of this S1 can essentially be shrunk away. So you should think of the electric charge with respect to the closed-plane gauge fields as the charge with respect to the U1 isometry of the Taubner space. So at the tip, it becomes the angular momentum. We have a spinning black hole sitting at the tip of the Taubner space. And you can actually directly show from the gravity solution that this thing lifts to a black hole solution in the Taubner space. Now, what we can do with this guy, so we're going to be considering supersymmetric black holes, and for this spinning black hole in Taubner space, you can take the asymptotic radius to infinity, and the solution the existence of the solution doesn't depend on this asymptotic radius, and in particular, you can consider limits in which you take the asymptotic radius to infinity. So in this case, sort of this Taubner space opens up, and you're just left you're just left with a black hole sitting in flat space, but now it's R4 instead of R3. So in fact, you can see explicitly by examining the gravity solution that as you first lift to 5D and get a solution of a black hole in top left space, and as you take asymptotic radius to infinity, you indeed recover the BMPV black hole, which is a spinning black hole in five dimensions. Again, the angular momentum is the angular momentum is identified with the charge, with the electric charge with respect to closed gauge fields, and it sits in one of the SU2s. So the rotation group on R4 is SU2 left cross SU2 right, roughly. The assumption of Thomson space is U1 times SU2. So the SU2 is just the rotation on the R3, and the U1 is transition along the S1. And this U1 is embedded in one of the SU2s in either left or right of this five-dimensional rotation group. Clearly, this is a charge with respect to that U1, which is embedded in one of the SU2s. So, which is also what you know from BMPV, namely the angular momentum is only in one of the left or right SU2. Okay, any questions or comments? Yeah.
It's in one of the SU2s, but geometrically you have equal angular momentum in the two orthogonal planes.
Yes.
So in five dimensions, it's not like it's spinning just in one. I'm trying to understand how.
It's spinning in.
In a reduced solution, there's no angular momentum.
Yes.
So you're in
no macroscopic.
Yeah. You have angular momentum in two orthogonal planes.
Yeah.
Reduce on one circle and you get rid of both angular momentum.
Yes, but the circle is fibers. Here the circle is fibered in a non-trivial way. So it's in fact the circle can be, it's like the hop vibration over an S2, and it's precisely the orbit of one of the U1s in SU2. Okay. Let's embed this picture in string theory. We'll consider type 2A string theory compatible on the Calabi-Yau manifold. In general, a BPS black hole would be described by a system of various wrapped D-branes, D0, D2, D4, and D6, which has charges labeled in the following way. So this Q0 will be D0 brain charge, P0 will be D6 brain charge, and QA, PA are D2 and D4 brain charge, where A labels a basis of two cycles or four cycles in the Calabi-Yau. Now, if I have a D6 brain that's wrapped on the Calabi-Yau, as you lift to M theory, you get the M theory compared on the Calabi-Yau times a circle, and the D6 brain just turns into a closed plane monopole. So for simplicity, we're going to ignore D4 brain for now. And consider a system with D0, D2, D6. It can have generic D0 or D2 charge, but we'll restrict to the case where it has only a single unit of D6 brain charge, because in the previous picture, we have this closed-plane monopole with one unit of charge that lives in top-knot space. In general, you have some top-knot with a singularity and multi-top-knot space. So if you have this system, and you consider the previous relation, you lift the D0, D2, D6 system into M theory. So what you get is an M2 brain wrapped on the Calabi-Yau that's sitting at the tip of the top knot space and carries some angular momentum. And as you take the asymptotic top knot radius to infinity, you end up with a spinning black hole that's made of M2 brains wrapped on the Calabi-Yau. The proposal is that, since we're talking about supersymmetric states, these things should be invariant as we change the asymptotic moduli, so expect that the partition function, some supersymmetric partition function of the black hole, or you can just think of as some kind of property-defined index, should be invariant as we take the asymptotic radius of the top knot to infinity. Therefore, one would roughly conjecture a relation like this. The partition function of the four-dimensional black hole made of D0, D2, and D6 brains with one unit of D6 brain charge, that's this P0 equals 1 here, should be equal to the five-dimensional partition function. This will be a partition function of a black hole made of M2 brains, this QAs now correspond to the wrapping number of the M2 brain on the Clavial, and it will carry some left angle momentum, which is identified with the D0 brain charge, and with a factor of 2, as you can check. Now, there are some subtleties in this correspondence. Firstly, one might worry that if you take, you know, even though it's plausible that as you deform the top knot radius, it doesn't change the number of supersymmetric bound states of this black hole, but as you take that radius to infinity, you might think that it's probably not obvious that if you'll be able to keep all the states, maybe there'll be some states that's trapped at the tip of the top knot space and then go away as you take the radius to infinity. So that's not obvious from this approach, but of course, this relation will be valid in supergravity. Namely, you can see explicitly that the solution of the 4D black hole goes to the solution of the 5D black hole as you follow this procedure. But it's rather subtle to understand what's happening to the microstates. But we'll ignore that for now, and we'll see that we get pretty good matching between the two in certain examples, and which is what made us believe that this could be true microscopically. Right, that's what I'm going to describe now. So, it will be the Witten index, which is a trace over all states with the proper sign. Well, in this case, it will be just n equals 2 string theory, so the black hole preserves 4 supersymmetries. But, that is true, but this thing generically will fall into BPS multiplets, so I'll factorize out these multiplets. So essentially, it's equivalent to inserting something like J squared to absorb these center of mass multiplets. So more precisely, it'll be a trace of minus 1 to the F, but over the BPS multiplets instead of each individual state. And the fundamental index will be defined in this way. Trace. I guess it will be in general. It will be you take the states in the multiple with the lowest angular momentum, and the other ones are obtained by acting on that with the broken supercharges. So you can, if you wish, you can try to define some index that traces over all the states, but then you need some insertions of F squared. Right. We can discuss more. We can discuss this when we come to the detailed expressions. The fundamental index will be the trace over the BPS multiples of minus 1 to the 2J3, which will be J3 is the spinning angular momentum. And in 5 dimensions, it's natural to consider an index which is trace over BPS states, but so minus 1 to the F will become minus 1 to the 2J left 3 plus 2J right 3, where J left and J right are the left and right angular momentum. Naturally, one would like to, this J four-dimensional angular momentum is identified with J right, and J left will turn into the charge with respect to the Coulomb gauge field. So naturally, under that identification, you say that the partition function defined by this guy would differ from this partition function by a sign, which is given by minus 1 to the 2J left 3, which is minus 1 to the Q naught in this case. So that's just the subtlety in this relation. Just to show that this is not entirely crazy, this relation between 4D and 5D black holes can be checked just at the level of classical entropy. You consider a system of D0, D2, and D6 brains. This is a fundamental black hole corresponding to these things right on the Clavial. And essentially can be calculated from the attractor mechanism, which determines the module in terms of the charges, and just plug into the Bekenstein-Hawking area law, and you get this expression where P0 and Q0 are the D6 and D0 brain charges as before. This capital Q here is some kind of invariant combination in terms of the D2 brain charges. That's sort of the only way you can write something that's cubic in the D2 brain charges using this DABC, which is 1/6 the intersection form of 4 cycles on the clavier. So you can roughly think of this Q, this capital Q is roughly the same as this lower Q, the scale in the same way.
Sorry, what
are
the Ys?
Ys are defined in terms of little Qs in this way. Yeah, that's just what comes out from the attractor formula. And in particular, if you restrict the case of one unit of D6 brain charge, that is P0 equal to 1, this entropy is given by that. And that can be square root of QQ minus a quarter Q0 squared. And that can be compared to the BMPV entropy formula, which is square root of QQ minus J squared, where J is the SQ left angular momentum. So you see that they indeed agree under the identification J equals Q0, as we said before. So, any questions about that? Okay, so let's consider the example of n equals 4 string theory. These are string communications with 16 supersymmetries. For example, type 2A on K3 cross T2. Now, one can also consider hierotic string on T6, but it's the type 2A that's relevant for our purpose because you want to lift to M theory. This thing has half BPS black holes and quarter BPS black holes. The half BPS black holes are described by the Dabhokar RV states, and their degeneracies are pretty well understood. The quarter BPS black holes is slightly more complicated. There's been a conjecture on this, which I'll describe very shortly. But let's just see an example, which is a quarter BPS black hole made of D0, D2, and D6 brains. And we'll again set P0 to be 1. Well, you can say that this is not the general, most general quarter BPS black hole, but there's a very large U-duality group, and a lot of them can be related to this guy. So we'll just consider this example. So if we lift it to M theory, can map on the Clabiel, and follow our procedure of taking the asymptotic radius of the top knot to infinity, you end up with M2 brains wrapped on K3 cross T2, and with that carries some spinning angular momentum J left in the flat space in R4. What we can further do is to compactify on one of the circles in the T2 and go back to 2A. Well, that's a different circle compared to this one that we opened up. So this is just type 2A that describes the same thing. We have D2 brains left on K3 coming from the M2 brains transverse to the M3 circle, and also we have M2 brain wrapped on the T2, which now becomes fundamental string wrapped on the S1. Again, it carries some angular momentum J left in the R4. Okay? Now we can further do a T-duality on this S1 and get type 2B theory on K3 cross, still K3 cross S1, but this D2 brains will turn into D3 brains, and these fundamental strings will become momentum modes along the S1, and again, we have some momentum J left. And if you wish, you can further relate by U-duality to a D1, D5 system on K3 cross S1, and with momentum along the S1 and angular momentum J left. So this is a rather familiar system because it can be described, this is the ground states of this system, can be described by the D1, D5, can be described by the CFT, which come from the sigma model on the symmetric product space of K3, where this is the Q1, Q5 fold symmetric product, where Q1 is the D1 brain charge and Q5 is D5 brain wrapping number. So here's a picture. So this is the K3, and here's the S1 circle. We have Q5, D5 brains wrapped on the K3, a bunch of D1 brains which are point-like sitting on the word volume of the D5 brain, and they carry some angular momentum which is L0 of the CFT. Now in the CFT there's a natural index to consider, which is the Leibniz genus. It depends on two parameters, Y and Q, which are, this FL is the FL is the left R symmetry charge, and L0 is the momentum along the circle. And this is only a trace over the left moving sector. So the right moving sector are the Raman sector ground states in order to preserve supersymmetry. This is a 4,4 CFT. So according to our dictionary we had before, from this 4D5D connection, we would like to say that the four-dimensional partition function will be just the same as, well, which is the property-defined index of the D0, D2, D6 system, will just be the same as the partition function of the D1, D5 system on K3 cross S1. This partition function actually contains two parts. There's a Z D1, D5, this elliptic genus of this D1, D5 CFT, and there's a Z0. The Z0 is the partition function of a single D5 brain wrapped on the K3. The reason we have this factor Z0 is the following. For simplicity, let's consider a single D5 brain and many D1 brains. So the CFT basically just describes the degrees of freedom of the D1 brain moving on the D5 brain. But if you just consider that, we're missing the partition function of the D5 brain itself, which by UDRT is related to a hydraulic string that winds on a circle, and you have a partition function of that hydraulic string. It turns out that it's very nice, it's extremely nice if you take into account of the combination of these two instead of just the partition function of the D1, D5 CFT, by which I mean without the degrees of freedom of the D5 brain itself. Okay, any questions, comments? So these various quantities have been computed. The D1, D5, the partition function, the elliptic genus of D1, D5 CFT has been derived by Diagraph, Moore, and Verlin days. It can be defined in the following way. So here, this is the degeneracy of the ground states of the D1, D5 system, where R0 is the momentum along the circle, N is Q1, Q5. Related to the center charge of the CFT, and J left is the left moving angular momentum in the R4, which in this case is identified with the left moving R charge of that CFT. There'll be some parameters, rho, sigma, and nu, which couple to these three quantum numbers in the following way, and you just look at the partition sum. And here's the answer, where these numbers C are the coefficients of the Leibniz genus on a single copy of K3. This is basically kind of a multi-string partition sum. So that's why this thing is exponentiated compared to the single K3 case. This is Z0 here, which is the partition function of a single D5 brain wrapped on the K3. It can be related to winding hydraulic string by U-duality, and the flux on the D5 brain wall volume will turn into various modes of the hydraulic string coming from the Neurian lattice, and here it is. It's computed by these authors. If you're familiar with this kind of expression, there's some subtlety here. There's a prefactor which essentially comes from the integration of the path integral of the hydraulic string center of mass mode, and it's very confusing that whether you should take this into account or not. You naively one would think that since we're counting BPS states in 5D, we shouldn't take into account of this contribution from the center of mass contribution to the path integral. But it turns out that if you take that into account, you get an expression that's manifestly invariant with respect to some of the symmetries of the theory. It's a subtle factor, and also has to do with But I'll discuss that in a little bit.
That factor of 1 over sine prime is very troubling.
Yes.
Can you really divide it from 0 to
It can be derived from path integral. It's in fact derived by these people, and you can see.
We don't need these people. These are street bosons.
Yes. Yes.
It's manifest.
Yes.
What's not manifest is the 1 over sine prime.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, that factor.
I don't see how that comes from.
It can actually be shown by.
It's needed for the thing to be modular.
Yes. Yes.
Why do we need this thing to be a modular form for SP2Z?
No, it doesn't need to be.
It's nice, but it doesn't.
that is true. That is true.
Because you know the important duality.
Yes.
Duality,
but
manifest from this expression with and without the sign.
No, S duality is not manifest if you drop this factor. I was about to show this on the next slides, but rho and sigma nu are, from a fundamental point of view, we couple to QE squared, QM squared, and QE dot QM. And as you say toggles to tau plus 1, this S duality, it will shift, for example, QE goes to QE, QM goes to QM plus QE, and that will shift rho and sigma and nu in certain ways, but this factor is not invariant under that. But that doesn't.
Still, I mean, do you know how to derive that 1 over sine squared pi from integration over 2?
In fact, Masagi has shown me a derivation of that. It's yeah, it can be derived by yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, it predicts all sorts of PTS spaces on that.
Well, actually, I would say that. It seems that
because you can expand the powers,
yes, yes,
and predict arbitrarily large angular momentum for all the other things.
That's right.
And that violates.
Okay. It's firstly not so clear how you should expand this.
Expand it one way or the other.
Yes, exactly. Yes, I agree.
Don't get out of it that way. No, you know that you can.
Yeah, yeah.
One way or the other.
Yes,
you're predicting.
Yes.
Right? I mean, it's clear.
It's not clear. It seems natural by counting BPS states that this factor should be dropped. But then the result is not manifestly invariant under S duality. It's not actually immediately obvious to me why it would not be invariant under. It would not give a degenerate that's invariant under S duality. The reason being that when you include this, it's not really a well-defined expansion. So when you drop this, so if you assume that including this factor is invariant under S duality, and if it has a well-defined expansion, then if you drop this, it certainly will not be invariant under S duality. But the first assumption is not really true. So that's something I don't understand. But so that's the subtlety here. Now, I've gone beyond what I was going to say. If you take the product, the z naught with the partition function, the elliptic genus of d1, d5, cft, you get an answer which can be written in a very simple way, which is e to the 2 pi I sigma. This factor is rather trivial. It's due to a shift of q1, q5 by some anomalous induced deep brain charge, and was divided by this function phi, which is a function of rho, sigma, and nu, and it's known as the unique weight 10 modular form of SP2Z. And in fact, this 1 over phi was a generating functional of the degeneracy of n equals 4 black hole conjectured by Digraph and Verlinde's back in 96. Let me just describe a little more what I mean by that thing being the generating function of the black hole degeneracy. So now we're talking about four-dimensional black holes. So n equals 4 string chromatic location has a U duality group, which is SL2Z times 0,6,22c, where that's the symmetry group of the Norrian lattice, and this is S duality, we can assemble the charges of various wrapped rings in the following way. So there are electric and magnetic charges which transform properly under the SL2z. The electric charges are Q naught, the D0-brain charge, and the D2-brain charge on the charges of D2-brain wrap on the K3, and the D4-brain which wrap on the whole K3. The magnetic charges are D6-brain and the D4-brain wrapped on a 2-cycle in the K3 times the T2, and the D2-brain which is only wrapped on the T2. So it's slightly different from the usual, where you would think D0 and D2 are electric and D4 and D6 are magnetic. So these are the charge vectors that transform properly under the S duality group. And firstly, one would have to make a simplifying assumption here, which is that we'll assume that the degeneracy of the 4D black hole is only a function of three invariant combinations of charges, which are QE squared, QM squared, and QE dot QM. That assumption, firstly, would be true if the U-duality group were the continuous version of that group. But then this will be the only invariant combination of the charges. But for the discrete U-duality group, there are actually more invariant combinations of the charges. For example, if this QE and QM have some common factor, you can factor out this common factor and use this combination, and that will still be something that's U-duality invariant. So a priori it's not clear why it should only be a function of this, and in fact it may not. But we'll make this assumption, which is the same as the assumption made by Dagorf and Verlinde's, and proceed. If you follow this chain of duality we had before, QE squared will be identified with L naught in the D1-D5 system, this momentum along the circle. QM squared will become N, which is Q1, Q5, and QE dot QM will become the left-wing angular momentum. So if you look at a generating function of the following form, this is not any usual partition function, it's just some generating function where you sum over K, L, M, which are here these invariant combination of the charges, and weigh them by rho, sigma, and nu, and you realize that this is precisely the generating function I use to define the elliptic genus, which is here. It's precisely this generating function here, and the answer following from the five-dimensional elliptic genus and the D5 brain center of mass, well, the D5 brain function, you plug in that and you get 1 over 5 as a function of rho, sigma, nu, and this will be identified with the generating function of the 4D black hole degeneracy as expected. That's in the sense that this is a generating function of the formation of black hole degeneracy, but as Greg pointed out, there are subtleties related to this certain factors that come out of the center of mass path integral of the hydraulic string. Yes. Yes.
By discriminant, I mean the thing under the square root in the formula for the entropy. And so it predicts BPO states, BPO states with large negative discriminants, which we know in some regions of modulized states can exist.
Okay.
Because there can be split attractor flows, you can't say that negative statement for all regions.
Right.
But there's some very funny things that we're talking about.
Yes.
I think it really ought to have some kind of dependence on the moduli transportation. Because we know that states become unstable. We know that down states at D0, D2, D4, D6 brains can become unstable.
Yes.
As we move around the moduli.
Yes.
And split attractor flows.
Yes. Well, it's clear where it comes from in the five dimensions from the D1-D5 CFT. So the subtleties are probably in the 5D, 4D correspondence. Okay, maybe we can discuss more after the talk. Any other questions, comments? So that's all I have to say about N equals 4 black holes. So let me now move on to black holes in N equals 8 string theory. which will be we'll consider tight weight compactified on T6. So there are 1/8 BPS black holes in this theories which we're interested in. So basically, you have the similar chain of dualities as before. You just have to replace K3 by T4, and everything is the same. And you would relate a D0, D2, D6 system in type 2A on T6. You relate that into D1, D5 on T4. So roughly, you conjecture that the four-dimensional partition function is the partition function of the symmetric product of Q1, Q5 copies of T4. Now, there are some subtleties, a number of subtleties in this relation. Firstly, the elliptic genus of the CFT on that space is zero because of there are extra supersymmetries. And in order to make the answer non-zero, one needs to define a modified elliptic genus as shown by Malacena, Moore, and Strominger. It's basically the same as the ordinary elliptic genus, except for that there's an actual insertion of J right square here. And that will give you a non-zero index on for that CFT. And correspondingly, because we have inserted this extra J right square, correspondingly on the left-hand side of this equation, we need to modify the four-dimensional index in a similar way. So we need to insert J, while this J right will become the angular momentum in 4D, so it will become the J3 square inserted in this trace. A second difference from the previous case is that I didn't write a Z0 factor here because that factor is trivial. Before we had a partition function of D5 ring on that's wrapped on the K3, which is related to a hydraulic string by u-duality. But in this case, this D5 ring is wrapped on T4. It has a lot more a lot more zero modes, and in fact, the partition function is basically trivial. It can be related to one way to think about this is you can. This D5 ring can be related to a hydraulic string wrapped on a circle, but now this D5 ring is wrapped on T4, so it can be related to a type 2 string wrapped on a circle after T-duality. And we don't look at this right moving sector, which is always restricted to the Riemann-Rank ground states, but on the left moving sector, there'll be cancellation. In the case of hydraulic string, we sum up all the oscillators. But in this case, we'll have a type 2 string. When you sum up the oscillators, the fermions and bosons cancel out. Of course, you will say that the partition function will be zero, but we should factor out this Riemann ground states as well. So it's after you do that, it will be one, essentially. So you can essentially just ignore this Z0 factor here. Any questions? No, that's something extra, which I didn't write here, but it should be included.
It's one if I include the J squared also?
Yes. So with this prescription, we know what this answer for this elliptic genus, for this modified elliptic genus, so we should be able to produce the answer in four dimensions. Now I'm going to make a further simplifying assumption. Again, it's related to the fragmentation of the black hole, as I mentioned before. Let's just assume that the charge of a black hole here will be related to Q1, Q5, and L0 and J left in this D1, D5 CFT. Let's just assume that these charges are co-prime. When they're not co-prime, the answer is slightly more troublesome to describe. So the point is that if this four-dimensional theory obtained from type 2A compactified on T6 has u-duality group which is E7,7. If the actual u-duality group were the continuous version of E7,7, then essentially the only invariant combination of the charges is this quartic invariant, which is the so-called Kramer-Julian invariant. It's a quartic expression of charges in the electric and magnetic charges, as wrote down before. But of course, the actual u-duality group is the discrete version, and there are a lot more invariants. It's difficult to say, I don't know if, how to classify these invariants, but I'll proceed by making a simplifying.
I'm not sure that the following statement was proven by some mathematicians. if you truly evaluate the set of four of the entries,
yeah.
If you specify the canary dual value, then there exists a set of seven of the transformation that takes one value of the value and another value of the set of the value.
Okay, I'd like to.
Take two integer charge vectors.
Well, if these charges have, okay, assuming they're primitive. Okay, that's interesting. Maybe I can ask you something about that after the talk. But okay, so now I'll proceed by assuming that the degeneracy of the black hole is only a function of the Kramer-Julia invariance. But even despite what you said, even this assumption is not strictly true, because if the charges have some common factors, then if you divide out by these common factors and form the Kramer-Julia invariance using that set of charges, it will be an invariant as well. And in fact, you'll find that the answer you get from 5D indeed will have non-trivial dependence on that. So if you just take that answer and rewrite it in terms of four-dimensional charges, it will indeed not only be a function of the Kramer-Julia invariant, but the invariance obtained by dividing a charge by some common factor. But I'll ignore that for now. So, and we can write down a generating function for the of the degeneracy of the black hole, which is that I just sum over all the integer Kramer-Julia invariants and weighted by some number q. Okay, so now you just take the answer from the five-dimensional modified Elibi genus and plug in, and the answer is very simple. This four-dimensional partial function is the eta function to the minus 6, there's q to the fourth here, and sum over q to the m squared, where m runs through all the integers. So it's very simple. This is basically some eta function times the theta function. Now, we first obtain the answer from 5D, and we're unsure whether it's correct. As far as I know, there hasn't been a four-dimensional derivation of that. So we'd like to come up with a purely four-dimensional argument just to confirm this expression. So we have made assumption that the degeneracy of the black hole only depends on the Kramer-Julia invariant J. Let's consider an example of, of course, if you want to confirm this, if you assume that it only depends on J, then you just need to calculate the degeneracy for any example that realizes all possible value of J, and then you are done. So for example, if you consider the D4-D0 system, namely you have a D4 brain wrapped on various cycles in a T6, and the D0 brain, its Kramer-Julia invariant is 4 Q naught D, where this D is basically the self-intersecting number P1, P2, P3. Let me need to write something. Let's consider the T6 as the product of three tori, which in general may not be the case, but let's just consider it in the case when it's a Cartesian product. We have D4 brain wrapped on three different kinds of D4s, and wrapped on these product of these two T2s, or these two T2s, or these two T2s. Of course, there are more possible ways of wrapping the D4 brain, but this will be the only example we're going to be considering. And the wrapping number, we'll call them P1, P2, and P3. The Kramer-Julia invariant of that D4-D0 system is given by this expression. The simplest case is when P1, P2, P3 are all equal to 1, and then J is just 4 Q naught. In general, the Kramer-Julia invariant will be either a multiple of 4 or minus 1 mod 4. The other case can be obtained by turning on some D2 brain charge, which is a rather straightforward generalization of this example. So I'll just restrict to the case when J is 4, is a multiple of 4. What is the D0 brain partition function? This is a partition function which is defined by summing over J, but I'll do something slightly different by taking this D4-D0 system of this D4 brain charge and sum up arbitrary D0 brain charge and weigh them by Q, but this exponent is only the D0 brain charge, so J is 4N. And I redo this sum based on that expression. I get a slightly different expression, which is this guy, eta to the minus 6, times this kind of theta function. It's contained in that, but this is a partial function, the generating function of the degeneracy by summing over D0 brain charges, the D0 brain charge. Okay, so any questions, comments about that? So this D4 brain is wrapped on this cycle of charge 111. So this is a cycle in T6, which I'll call P. So you might think that from this picture that this is just the three intersecting T4s.
So the D0 brains are being modeled by
essentially, yes. That's where the eta function comes from. Here you might think that this D4 brain is just three transversely intersecting T4s. And it's kind of hard to say what happens when you put in D0 brain, what happens at the intersection of the D4 brains. But fortunately, we can avoid that problem by tilting this T6 so that it's no longer a Cartesian product of the T2s. And in that case, you'd expect the D4 brains to join together into a smooth submanifold in the T6. The reason is simply that you want this thing to preserve supersymmetry, but as generically as you deform the angle between this tori, they will no longer be mutually supersymmetric. So they need to reconnect in some funny way. So let me describe that more precisely. So I have this cycle in T6. We're going to consider a generic T6 that admits this cycle P as a holomorphic submanifold. That's actually not true for the most general T6. The most general T6, for the most general complex structure on T6, it may not have any codimension 1 complex submanifold at all. So actually the T6 that admits this P will be some kind of polarized abelian variety. In this case, it will be a principally polarized abelian variety. That doesn't matter. We can study calculate some kind of topological numbers of P from various index theorems. So you find that its Euler character is 6, its signature is minus 2, and it has B1 equals 6 and B2 equals 16. And here's the Hodge diamond of P, assuming it's a smooth submanifold of T6. The funny thing is that the B2, the number of 2 cycles in P, is actually 16, which is one more than the number of 2 cycles in T6, which is 15. So that means that P must have an extra 2 cycle, which I'll call gamma, that's not induced from T6, in the sense that it's not the intersection of a 4 cycle in T6 with P itself. So when this happens, you can imagine the possibility of turning on some gauge flux along this cycle gamma, or something related to gamma, without actually inducing any D2 brain charge, because it doesn't really correspond to D2 brain in ambient space. But nevertheless, this kind of flux will induce D0 brain charge. So that provides a possibility of the D0 brain to actually dissolve into this flux, and you wouldn't be able to tell by looking at charges of this system. Let me be a little more precise. We'll take two cycles in P, which are obtained basically by taking these three kind of T4s and intersect with P. I get two cycles, which are called gamma alpha 1, alpha 2, and alpha 3. And then you can argue that basically by the requirement that this intersection form on P is odd and unimodular, there must be some gamma such that gamma dot alphas equals 1 and gamma gamma equals 1. I'll show you on next transparency how to explicitly see this gamma. But once you have that, you can take a combination beta, which is 2 gamma minus some of the alpha i's, so now the beta is orthogonal to all the alpha i's and have self-intersection number minus 2. So we're going to turn on flux along the cycle beta. But there's a subtlety in turning on this flux due to the free Witten anomaly. This manifold is not spin. For example, it has signature minus 2. A spin manifold will have signature that is a multiple of 8. And also you can see that from the fact that minus sum of the alpha i's is actually the first trend class of P, and it's not a even cohomology element. So when that happens, your force will turn on a half integral flux, which is of this form. So the flux must be half the first trend class plus some integral class. So in this case, the first trend class is just minus the sum of the alpha i's by a junction formula. But you notice that if you turn on some flux in beta, beta contains some of the alpha i's. So if you turn on some half integral multiple of beta, then you're okay. So the allowed fluxes on the D4 brain wrapped on P that do not introduce any extra D2 brain charge will be of this form, m plus half beta where m is integer. But nevertheless, this thing induces D0 brain charge given by this formula, and you can calculate it. It's using the self-intersection number of beta. It's given by m plus half square minus a quarter. So of course, when you have D0 brains moving on the D4 brain world volume, they can be described as point-like instantons, and their moduli space is a Hilbert scheme of a number of points on the D4 brain world volume. But here we see that there's a new possibility, which is that the D0 brain can dissolve into some kind of smooth U1 flux F, and doesn't induce any D2 brain charge. Now this flux itself has no moduli, but there are discrete ways of there's labeled by M. There are so many ways of this dissolving the D0 brain into these fluxes. So if you calculate the partition function by summing up. So you fix the D4 brain, and you sum up D0 brain charge, and here's the answer. There's an eta function to the minus 6 come from this is a generating function of the Euler character of the Hilbert scheme of a number of points on D4 brain world volume, where the 6 come from the Euler character of P. And then you take into account the possibility that the D0 brain can dissolve into this flux, and it will induce charge m plus half square. This minus a quarter is hiding in the eta function. So you precisely get this expression, and this is precisely the one we conjecture from five dimension. Let me. That is true. But those will just correspond to, this will give rise to essentially the center of mass multiplet. They'll give rise to the fermion zero mode, which generates the BPS multiplet. In fact, there's also that the D4 brain has a moduli space, which is the T6 itself. The D4 brain itself turns out to be rigid, but up to translation in the T6. So the moduli space of this D4 D0 system will include this T6 factor in a trivial way. But when you quantize it, you get some fermions, which will generate a center of mass multiplet. Let me just say a little more about this cycle. The gamma I mentioned earlier, we first got that by guess, but actually there's a pretty explicit way of seeing that. So we had a D4 brain wrapped on the holomorphic cycle of class 111, as here. Now, in general, if you take T6 to be a generic T6, which admits a Kähler form in the class 111, it can be realized in the following way. You take a genus 3 Riemann surface, called S3 here, and you can map it into a Jacobian variety of S3, which is T6. This S3 is actually embedded in this Jacobian variety, and you can take, so this T6 is a group, you can take S3 and add it, S3 plus S3, and that's is essentially a symmetric product of a twofold symmetric product of S3, which is embedded in this divisor, which I call P111, and that is precisely this D4 brain world volume, this submanifold in the class 111, and there's a natural way of embedding this S3 inside P111, and that's nothing but the class gamma that's showing on the previous slide. The interesting thing is that this is not obtained by intersecting this P111 with anything. It's sort of a non-convenient intersection, which is why it's special. Now, in general, one might attempt to do a accounting of D4 brain wrapped on some cycle P1, P2, P3 and bound to D0 brains, but that would be a much more complicated problem because the D4 brain itself will have a non-trivial moduli space, and funny things can happen on sublocals of the moduli space where there will be more possible ways of dissolving the D0 brain to in other kind of flux. So I don't have anything much to say about that. Well, I think my time is almost up, so I probably won't be able to discuss the comparison. Okay. So now let me discuss the connection to macroscopic entropy. So we have conjectured certain expressions for the degeneracy of n equals 4 and n equals 8 black holes in four dimension, but there are subtleties in both cases, as I mentioned. But anyway, we'd like to compare that to the macroscopic answer, which we don't really know how to define, but the standard way is through the Waltz formula, which is the only way we know how to define this entropy in the say supergravity with higher curvature corrections. So L effective is the effective action written covariantly in the in terms of curvature tensor, and you take its variation with respect to R A B C D and integrate over the horizon of the black hole, and that's the how we can calculate the entropy of a black hole in higher curvature gravity. And there'll be corrections of a certain type coming from terms in the effective action that looks like R squared F to the 2G minus 2, where R is the Riemann tensor, and this is a various combination of the Riemann tensor and the gravity photon field strength. So that has been it's been shown by Cardoso, DeWitt, and Mahaft how to organize how to actually, you know, if you know these corrections, you can actually calculate the correction to the entropy. And it was shown by Uguri, Schrödinger, and Waffa that it's related to this entropy coming from these corrections are related to the topological string free energy by the Legendre transform. Basically, the reason is that the coefficients of these terms in the effective action are the topological string amplitudes. There's also some general argument of sin on this. But anyway, so the OSV conjecture is roughly of this form. One would like to say that if you take some degeneracy of the black hole, which is, should be some properly defined supersymmetric index, which I'll call omega, the function of P and Q. P and Q are magnetic and electric charges. You sum over Q, weighted by some potential, e to minus Q phi, and that should be equal to z top square, where z top is the topological string partition function. Of course, the subtlety is what are these two quantities, and that's not very clear. So I will not be able to tell you exactly what they are, but my strategy will be very simple-minded. I'll calculate the black hole partition function from the exact degeneracy as we found, and compare that to z-top. And that's something, some straightforward calculation. There'll be one slight simplification, which is that we'll restrict the case when P0 equals 0, so we'll consider the black hole without any D6 brain charge. Of course, we first derived all these formulas by assuming P0 equals 1, but then we take the answer and assume that it's only a function of the U-duality invariant combination of the charges, and then we can deduce the expression when P0 equals 0. The advantage of that, firstly, simplify the calculation, but more importantly, which is also related, if P0 were not 0, for a D6-D2 system, the classical entropy goes like square root of P0 times Q cubed. So when you sum up this, weighted by e to the minus Q times phi, this is quite divergent, and I don't see any obvious way of regularizing that. And actually, So if you blindly plug in P0 not equals 0 and do this calculation, there'll be similar kind of problems. So I don't know how to treat that. Yes, that was again. Yeah, but it's a different kind.
Why not just put e to the minus theta times the mass?
I'm not saying that there. I don't know how to regularize this thing, but it's certainly simple to ignore that possibility because we are allowed to fix the D6 brain charge and only sum over D2 brain charges. And when there's no D6 brain charge, it's slightly better and can be regularized in somewhat standard way. Firstly, if you take the answer for the degeneracy of n equals 8th black hole, I'll just take that index to be the index we have defined, which gives you this degeneracy that is computed by this generating function. Firstly, let me say how I arrange the charges. So there are electric and magnetic charges. The electric charges include this Q naught, which is D0 brain charge, and QA, which are wrapped D2 brains, but one should also include closely monopoles and NS5 brains wrapped on the T6 in various ways. There are also magnetic charges, which are P naught and PA. This PA are wrapped D4 brains and various momentum in the T6 and wrapped fundamental strings. I'll set this P naught to zero. When you set P naught to zero, the Kramer-Julie invariant simplifies greatly and can be written in this very nice formula. This DABC is sort of a generalized self-intersection number that includes this closely coupled monopole charge and NS5 brain as well. So this is just some function of the various charges. It's quartic. You can just plug in to the OSV, sort of the mixed ensemble partition sum. All you have to do is essentially do a Poisson-Ruiz summation on these QAs. Anyway, it's a very boring calculation. Here's the answer. Yes. The exact degeneracies are given by this that formula. Yes. So let me say a little more. You have to sum over Q naught and QA. Because there's a Kramer-Julie invariant, you can actually replace the summation over Q naught by summation over J. But the summation over J is given by this generating function. And the summation over QA, if you do a Poisson summation, you rewrite it in terms of summation over shifts of some electric potential. Here's the answer, whereas F tilde is a modular, it's essentially a modular transform of that function. So that's because I have sum over Q naught turning to sum over J and essentially turning to that function. Let me explain the various terms in this equation. There's a summation over shifts of the electric potential. That's sort of expected because we're doing a partition sum weighted by E to, well, or sum over PQ to minus Q lambda, phi lambda. These Qs are integers, so this expression will be manifested in variance as you shift phi by 2 pi I. This summation automatically restores that periodicity. Here's z top squared. Z top is the topological string partition function on T6. There's a factor of g top to the eighth, where g top is the topological string coupling, which is basically 1 over phi naught in this case. Turns out there's a factor which is the volume of the T6, expressed in terms of the attractor moduli, which are related to these charges. Then there's this function f tilde, which is related to a modular transform of that function. But we arrange it in such a form that it has an expansion which is 1 plus things that are suppressed by e to the minus the volume of the T6 divided by g top square. From the point of view of topological string, this is a highly non-perturbative correction, so we'll ignore that. But if you do that, then what's left is basically this quantity here. this expression is exact if you assume that that's the right generating function for the degeneracy. So you can do a modular transform and it will become a different function, which is a function of G top square as opposed to 1 over G top square. No, there'll be, I think there'll be some factor which is there'll probably be some factor which
it's
is
not, it's not a crazy question because I mean, you've developed a strong
no, it's not. Well, but that's the string coupling, but not the topological string coupling here. Well, this topological string coupling is essentially 1 over charge, and they're calculated in large charge.
No, it's in the limit in which their calculation is.
Oh, well, let's see. Q naught, let's see, is Q naught Q much bigger than D?
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting.
I'm just mentioning that that's the standard picture we use when we think about constants. This is exact between the boundary of n and j. I'm just saying it's interesting.
Oh, wait.
I mean, I'm just trying to stress that, you know, you don't just throw away the depth tilde because you think you're working at the top. Well, the really, I mean, a very interesting physical regime, like constants from the width is the top is large.
I'm sorry. This phi naught, well, phi will scale like charge as you scale all the charges. And the phi will scale in the same way, right? So as you scale the charge by some, all the charge by some common factor, then I would think that p naught plus I phi naught will scale by the same factor. I thought phi naught should be square root d over q naught, so instead of q naught cubed.
Maybe it's one of the
Q.
Still, Q naught is
going to be much. No, but D is cubic in the charges.
No, you want Q naught
in the regime in which they're working. Because Q naught
is much, much bigger than
Q. Okay. That is true, actually. Yeah, right. But because you're saying because of the Cardi formula will require.
In among other things, in order to invoke the Cardi formula, you definitely want Q.
Yes. Okay, but then, you know, there's. But the expression is supposed to be valid even when Q naught is not greater than D, but just Q naught cubed is greater than D.
Which expression? This expression?
No, I mean, the result of Marcina, Stramberg, and Witten, even though they didn't show that, but I think. There's probably some fractional string picture that will justify when Q naught.
I don't know about that. But all
okay.
I want to say is, and this is really the
okay.
exact formula. It's interesting.
Yeah. Okay.
And see if it. Agrees. Ah, yes, that's the thing. I mean, does it. Does it then modify in a large way the top square?
Okay.
That's just interesting. A question. That was it.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't thought about it, but we can discuss it later. Okay, so that's for the n equals 8 answer. Just to remind you that the topological tree on T6 is of this form, which is e to the f naught. F naught is the preponential, just at tree level. It's given by DABC, XA, XB, XC divided by X naught, where these X's are, well, these variables in special geometry in a standard way. And they're related by to the charges by the attractor formula, which is XA equals PA plus I phi A. And the volume of the torus just given by this expression. Okay, so in the case of N equals 4 black holes, we wrote this 1 over phi, which is a function of rho, sigma, and nu, as a generating function for the degeneracy. As you know, there are subtleties in if you try to expand this generating function and get a degeneracy in terms of the charges. But if one tries to define that degeneracy by doing contour integral, so if this thing has a well-defined Fourier expansion, then this contour integral will just pick out the coefficients of the various terms. So if you just look at this contour integral, you can try to ask, well, if you fix these charges, and what is the degeneracy you get by doing this contour integral? In fact, this was done in the original paper of Dagraff and Verlinde's. You can try to evaluate this by doing an integral around the poles and pick up the residues. The poles of this function, namely the zeros of this function phi, are the so-called rational quadratic divisors. They are basically the images of nu equals zero, under the action of sp2z. This sp2z acts in the following way: you assemble these three complex variables into a matrix omega, which is of this form, and you map it to a omega plus b times c omega plus d inverse, where a b c d is this sp2z matrix. When we act it with the general SP2D transform, the quadratic rational divisor becomes of this form. So there's some integers, A, K, L, M, C. One would like to sum up the contribution from the poles, but a priori it's actually not clear how to which are the poles you should take into account. In order to get the right behavior of a large charge, you need to ignore this contribution from nu equals zero. Then if you do that, then the rational quadratic divisor that dominates is this guy, rho sigma plus nu minus nu square equals zero. You can calculate its contribution to the degeneracy, and it dominates in the large charge limit, and it produces precisely the exponential behavior of the leading classical entropy. The rest of the quadratic rational divisors, whatever they are, the contribution should be suppressed by e to the minus charge square, as one can see just by playing around this integral. And even though we don't know what precisely are the rational quadratic divisors, so that one is supposed to sum over, namely how to choose this contour in defining the previous contour integral, nevertheless, it seems reasonable to assume that all the other contributions are non-perturbative from the point of view of topological string coupling, and so we'll ignore them so far, and we also don't know how to calculate, how to sum them up. But we'll just ignore them because they're non-perturbative in topological string coupling. You calculate this mixed partition sum, and the answer is this. Again, you have a summation over the shifts of the electric potential, z top square times g top square, as there's some factor that come out. You have e to the minus k, which is defined in this way. It's the real part of x bar lambda del lambda f top. So if this f top were the tree level answer for f top, then this k is just an ordinary Kähler potential. But it turns out that the thing that's sitting here is this expression with this f-top being f-naught plus f-1, where in this case you have a topological string on k3 cross t2, you have a one-loop correction, which is this f-1 here. So I don't know what the interpretation of this term is, except that this is the simplest way we can come up with to arrange the expression. And there's a non-perturbative correction which come from the other quadratic rational divisors which we don't know how to calculate. The z-top is the expression where this term is the true-level answer, and this eta function is a one-loop correction come from the worksheet instantons wrapped on the T2. Okay, so so I told you some way of writing down the OSC partition sum for n equals 4 and n equals 8 black holes. There's actually a unified way to write down answers in there's a way to write down the answers in a slightly more unified way as follows. So this mixed partition sum, which is a function of p and phi, is given by the following. You sum over the shifts of the electric potentials, again, times something I call z top prime square. It's a slight modification of z top, and times square root of determinants of some metric g. And I put a q here because it will be quantum corrected in a certain sense. So now what are these various quantities? The z top square, in the case of k3 cross t2, turns out to be the z top square I wrote before times the imaginary part of t1 to the minus 12, where t1 is the complexified Kähler volume of the t2. This is nothing but the holomorphic anomaly for topological string k3 cross t2. So it's kind of interesting that it comes out as you write the answer in this way. In the case of t6, the z top prime is z top square times e to the 4k. There's no holomorphic anomaly of topological string on T6, so one cannot interpret this as a holomorphic anomaly, but it turns out that it's kind of like a holomorphic anomaly, because if you consider topological string on some orbital model, say T6 mod Z3 cross Z3, this would be the kind of holomorphic anomaly terms. So again, I don't know the interpretation of that. This G here is defined in the following way. The GQ is a classical piece plus a quantum correction. This is a topological string loop correction. This classical piece is just the metric that governs the kinetic term of the vector multiplets. It's the derivative of the prepotential. In fact, it's very natural because it's sort of the only metric we can write down in the space of all the x lambdas. This is a derivative with respect to So already you have a Kähler potential, which give you have a Kähler metric on the moduli space of on the Kähler moduli space. But the Kähler moduli space only involves this essentially the special coordinates, which are TAs, where A runs from where A runs from all the Kähler moduli. But here, in a topological string, you like to treat the topological string coupling and the Kähler moduli in an equal fashion, and this seems to be the more natural metric you can write down on the so-called whatever you want to call the moduli space of the topological string, and that will be it in the case of T6. But in the case of K3 cross T2, there's a one-loop correction which is slightly complicated but still relatively simple expression. I don't know the interpretation of that, except that it's clear it's a one-loop correction, and you can put it in here. It turns out that that's the answer you get. That's slightly different from what one would naively expect, but of course we have been doing many things we didn't justify, and most importantly, we don't know whether the index we've been using to in this calculation is really correct. So. For example, one of the important missing link to me is that it's not clear why the supersymmetric index, whatever you define, will be given by the macroscopic answer, which is obtained from the Walz formula based on some effective action. And in fact, the topological string is not exactly obtained from the Walz formula involving all terms in effective action, but special protected terms r squared f2 2g minus 2. How these two things are related is not clear. We saw that there's some sign of holomorphic anomaly coming into the game, but it's also not clear how that should work exactly. Again, there's the issue related to the fragmentation of the black holes, which will modify perhaps the expression of the black hole degeneracy in certain ways, and that will also change the answer. But it will not change the answer in the leading order. So I don't know what it implies in terms of topological string, perhaps something like baby universes, but I have nothing to say concrete to say about that. And one can try to consider the ANCOS2 orbifold of these ANCOS4 models, like the FHSV model, by trying to extend this kind of results to ANCOS2 black holes. And perhaps one can try a direct precise counting of large ANCOS2 black holes corresponding to deep brains wrapped on the Calabi-Yau in various ways. And to my knowledge, there has never been an example done for a compact Calabi-Yau, for a compact generic Calabi-Yau. Namely, one would like to calculate exactly the entropy of a large black hole in this, in general, ANCOS2 Calabi-Yau commodifications. So perhaps there's some way of doing that by studying the quiver quantum mechanics of these various wrapped brains, but I have nothing concrete to say about that. So that'll be it.